Welcome to Influential Visions. My name is Tyler Cohen Wood. Here, we interview futuristic leaders to share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring that you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. And here's your host today, Nat Schooler.
Today, I am joined by Timothy Hughes, and Tim's been in social selling for a long, long time, and he's the CEO and co-founder of DLA Ignite, and we're going to talk about the social dilemma.
We are. Thank you, Nat. Thanks for having me on here. I'm really excited.
Pleasure. Me too. I mean, this film has just been, it's been pretty crazy, right? Like people have, on my Facebook, they've just been like, oh, I didn't know that. Like, I didn't know social media is like affecting my brain and stuff. And it's a little bit weird, isn't it? I mean, you know, a little bit before we came on, you were sort of saying that your belief in your business is that social media has changed the world, right?
It has, yes.
You know, it's pretty crazy, isn't it?
It's changed society, and it's changed the way that we do business. You know, if you think about the news, certainly in the UK where I live, you switch on the news and it's about who's tweeted this and who's tweeted that. You know, there's a particular president currently in the US who uses Twitter a lot, because what he's been able to do is actually he's worked out, and actually it was Obama before him that actually worked out that you could talk directly to the people rather than having to go through the filter or the lens of the media, regardless of whether you think the media is biased or not. It doesn't matter. You can go straight to the people. And it's the same with anything, with pop stars, with politicians. There was a time when there was actually discussion between, I think it was the Prime Minister of Australia and someone else over Twitter. There was a conversation going on. It was during the Football World Cup, the last Football World Cup. It's changed everything. And even from something where, you know, we go for a meeting and what we'll do is we'll look somebody up, and, you know, someone's watching this and they'll go, I wonder who Timothy Hughes is. I'll look him up on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really strange. I mean, like, I actually wrote a chapter for a book the other day about it's a cyber men book, right? But it's explaining how I transitioned from like being in the booze industry and entering into, in essence, we'll call it the marketing world, right? That's what we'll call it. And you talking about that just reminds me, like, when I first started selling stuff on Twitter, right? Like, I was selling beer on Twitter. Yeah, two pubs, right? Like, directly. It was like, I was like, oh, have you heard about this brewery? It's really good. And they were like, oh, okay, I have three casks. And I was like, okay, great. And I send them, you know, and like, that was how easy it is, right? And it still is that easy, I think,
to a certain extent. Yeah, I think, you know, there's a number of things that people get wrong. The thing is that no one likes being interrupted anymore. I'm just going through some research from Google that's just come out called the messy middle, which is the fact that the way that people need to think is that there's like an infinite high street or an infinite shopping mall for the buyer. And we can all go online and we can search for this stuff and we can be looking for it. And then we go, I'm actually going to disregard that. I know when I bought my last car, you know, I looked on social media, I was in discussion groups, I was in Facebook groups. And part of that was some of the things I wanted to do. I pretty much knew which car I was going to buy. And my decision process that I went through was actually about qualifying people in and qualifying people out. But I knew which car I was going to buy by the time I spoke to the salesperson.
Right.
And I had a short list of three, and I knew I was wasting two of the salespeople's time.
Right. So basically, it's in essence that educational process of like, actually, yes, I don't really need to talk to a salesperson most of the time. The salesperson now is like,
and we actively avoid
the deal, right?
And we avoid them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because salespeople, we always know that salespeople are manipulative, and okay, there may be people watching this and say, I don't manipulate. But the fact of the matter is we think that in our minds, and what we think is reality. So what people need to do, or what people need to understand, is that there's an infinite of buyers out there looking for an infinite your products and services, and we've got an infinite amount of content to go through, and we're making decisions. And what most marketers are doing is still going to the market saying, buy my product because it's great. And we just go around it. Because, you know, you go to someone's website, and we generally ignore websites nowadays, because it just says they're just standard. You know, there was a research done recently where there was 10,000 websites and they all look exactly the same. So, I mean, we ignore that. And most people are pretty savvy in the way that we search for products and services. And so search has changed. I mean, in the report that came out recently, in July. So there's some research that a guy in Singapore called Simon Kemp creates.
Mm-hmm.
It's sponsored by Hootsuite and We Are Social.
Oh, right.
Mm-hmm. And there's one just come out. But in July, they're actually saying that for people between 16 and 24, they now use social media as their place to go rather than Google and search engines.
That's interesting. So they're basically asking their peers, right? And
Yeah. So it's about search has changed. And search has changed from once we first got into it, where people were asking very, very short questions, you know, on things like Ask Jeeves and Yahoo. And now what we're doing are actually asking quite complicated questions. Or what we're doing is we don't go to Google anymore and say, I want to buy, where can I buy a CD from? Because we know where we can buy CDs from. We go to Amazon, if you still buy CDs. That is, I'm just using that as an example. We right. know that there's certain places where we can go to buy, and that's changed.
Yeah. So it's basically this education process of finding the information that we want 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, right? Like in any location, yes. we can find it. Yeah. But
and I think with the social dilemma, getting back to I think that I think one of the things I watched it and I was kind of like, yeah, so what? But there are a lot of people that watched it, and obviously it was quite changing for them. You know, you can go on to, you know, Instagram is all completely controlled by algorithms. You know, the people watching this, you know, just go on and start using a different hashtag. I'm getting back into running again, and I started posting. I'm doing an app called Couch to 5K.
I saw that on Twitter.
So I started using hashtags like run and running and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the adverts I'm getting are all about running gear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how clever it is. And we just need to understand that's either use that to our advantage or just realize that's happening.
Yeah.
And the adverts you're getting, it's part of day-to-day life. You either put up with it or you don't use the platform.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I wanted to bend your ear, actually. You brought that up. So I'm sort of thinking, I mean, I'll talk about something, right? And then I will actually see an advert for something that's completely directly related to what I'm talking about. Yeah. So, you know, that's my problem. That's my mistake for not turning my microphone off on my phone. Right?
Yes. So there are certain, so are applications listening to what you say? The answer to that is yes.
Mm.
But you actually have control of that. If you go into your Bluetooth settings, what you'll see is that they'll have access to through the Bluetooth settings. There's also a function on the iPhone now, which shows you at the top, there's an orange dot, and it shows that there is an app probably using the camera. So for example, games, I'm not a gamer, but games that you use on your phone, if you're using them for free, when it shows you the advert, it actually opens the camera and it takes a photo of your face.
Wow.
Now that's been around for years. And if you read the terms and conditions, that's you when the fact, you know, and come on, it's a free game. What do you expect? you know, there's an advert that shows something to you, but it shows what it's doing is it takes a picture of your face because it wants to know whether the advert is applicable for you or not, whether you liked it or not. It's their way of trying to track about whether you're going to make any action from that advert. So these things are out there, and we just have to know about them and realize that they're there, and then work our lives around it, or just stop doing it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the product is so good now that people just can't get off it. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, before we came on, you know, you said a few points that you wanted to talk about, and you know. It also stuck out to me in that film, like the platforms have accelerated in the way that they manipulate us, but our brains haven't accelerated in the way that we handle it. Right. So,
yes.
So like we need to like take control of our screen time. I mean, that's, yes. That's what I've started doing.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, the first and foremost is, you know, it will calculate your screen time. And Apple, if you've got multiple Apple products, sorry, I'm talking about Apple, but I'm an Apple user.
It's all right. I love my iPhone. Yeah.
But, you know, I'm using an iMac. I've also got an iPhone. And what it will do is aggregate them together. And I get a report every Monday morning about what my screen time is. And I think that's really important. And I think there's also about having very clear rules about when you put your phone down. You know, I'm talking to you, so my phone's upside down, so I don't get any interruptions.
Yeah.
And you know, there's certain things where, you know, in the evening, I use social media up to a particular time, and then I just ignore it. And
yeah.
You know, even when I get up, I'll ignore it until like 9 o'clock in the morning. And I know you do this as well.
Yeah.
And then start accessing it, because I think what we need to do is make sure that we do it when we want to, and do it when we're best in a frame, in a our minds are best dealing with it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I wrote in this chapter I wrote for this book the other day, I actually wrote a bit about that, and it's like, surely psychologists should be working with UX designers to create a product that is more beneficial for people and perhaps better for society, right?
Yeah, there's got a story for you. There was a group of people that got together and they wrote a game, and the game was all about working together and creating a better world. And they launched this game, and of course, it didn't sell, because all people want from games is to go around shooting each other and stuff. But when they were creating this game, they had people working remotely. And what they did was that they realized that they'd actually had to build an application to enable them to enable them to work remotely. Mm-hmm. So they thought, that's a pretty cool app. We'll take that. Let's take that app that we used and wrote to get us to work remotely to market. And that's the beginning of Slack. So yes, maybe it was just that generally the way, you know, social media does an awful lot of good. And I think sometimes that we miss that. So I thought I'd come on this book here. It's 300 pages.
So it's The Hype Machine by Simon Aral, or is that an I?
Yeah, and he's MIT, and basically he's a data scientist, mm-hmm. And he takes, in effect, equivalent of the Hype Machine, but the data of it, and actually analyzes it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some interesting things, you know, he talks about, were or have we been manipulated in general elections, and actually there's the first 100 pages, he talks about the last American election. And then about page 120 says, well, does anybody actually look at Facebook ads anyway? Which is, and then he actually goes to the figures and says, yeah, really, you know, like, really, did anybody actually look at the ads, even though there were so many ads?
Good point.
bought them. And he said, did it actually make any difference? But what he does is that he takes the data and analyzes it. But he gives you different views rather than saying this is what the answer is.
Right.
And which enables you to make up your mind. So if you don't mind wading through 300 pages of fairly analytical data, it's worth a read.
Sounds very interesting. So,
yeah. Otherwise, you can use it to, you know, prop the door open or something.
Well,
I'm recommending it. I gave it a 5-star review. So.
All right. But yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because it's like, well, we know we get manipulated, and we know that there are certain people within this bracket of. So we've got all these consumer brackets, we've got all this audience, right? And we've analyzed the audience, and we know that this specific sector, let's just say it's in the middle, it might not be, but let's just say it's in the middle, and those people can be swayed one way or the other by advertising. And we know, based upon the personality insights that's provided by certain technology tools, that those people can be skewed and moved over. But what I'm worried about is everyone's obsessed with being with offending people, right? And it's like, well, hold on, you're not being politically correct. It's like, well, I don't need to be politically correct. I'm not a politician, yeah, right? And if I want to have a conversation with someone, then I'll have a conversation with someone. And just because I have a different view, right, does not mean that you need to block me on social media and tell me to F off, because it's ridiculous. You need to understand other people's views. It really annoys me, this.
Yeah, I think this is something that comes out in the, probably isn't discussed enough in The Social Dilemma, which is this thing of the echo chamber, where because of my job in social media, I'm connected to all kinds of people. I'm connected to people that support Trump, that support Joe Biden, that support Brexit, that are Remainers. And I deliberately keep it. But I don't get involved in discussions, because as soon as I do it once, and then people just pile it, you know, and it just becomes like I'm not going to spend my day, you know, discussing things with. And what you got to remember is that a lot of these things, politics, religion, football, they're all based on belief systems.
Yep.
And our belief systems are our belief systems, which is that, you know, I'm a Liverpool FC football club fan.
Okay.
Now, you could show me a list of things why Manchester United are better than Liverpool. and at the end of it, I'll just say, I don't believe you.
Yeah.
Because my belief system is that Liverpool is better. The same with a Man United fan. I could say, well, this is why Liverpool are better. And they go, no, I'm a Man United fan. And the same works with politics. So what happens is, what I see, certainly on social media, and this has probably happened, I would like to say 2 years, but it's probably gone on longer than this because of the way that politics certainly seems to have polarized.
Mm-hmm.
Is that... that people will sit within their own little bubble of people. So you'll get someone making a particular comment, and then everybody piles in and agrees with it, because what they've done is that they've unfriended all the people that would disagree with it. Now, there are certain things that I would unfriend people for.
Yeah.
But generally, you know, my view is, you know, I live in the UK. We don't have guns. But I'm connected to people in the States who do.
Yeah.
And I actually sit there and go, wow. Because, like, why would you need a gun?
If I could move there and get one.
And, yeah. But the thing is that I actually am interested in it, because I'm interested in, like, I'm not interested in it because they offend me, or I'm interested in it because I'm interested in other people's views.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they won't sway me to the fact, you know, in the UK, you can't have a gun. The laws are such that you can't have a gun anyway.
Right.
It wouldn't really matter whether I wanted one or not.
Right.
But it's just interesting about why people believe those things. But of course, I think I'm probably the opposite of what most people think. Most people, they want to have this echo chamber of which reflect their belief systems.
Yeah.
And actually, that's the way that we've gone. We've while Mike Zuckerberg provides Facebook, if we take that as an ability to connect to people throughout the world mm-hmm. who have different views, what we've done is that we've actually shrunk that back to the people that just reflect our belief systems.
Right. And then we've basically trained the algorithms to give us the news and the stuff that we like instead of things which actually educate us to the point of us expanding our minds towards a different place. Well,
yeah. I mean, it doesn't change our mind, but I think in the world, it's important that we see different points of view. And there's certain things that have gone on certainly over the last, so I can think over the last 12 months where, I think that me personally, I'm a person that has a fairly, I have certain views on things, but I'm always interested in hearing what other people have got to say. Yeah. Yeah. And I don't get offended because there's certain things that I believe in, but there's also, I'm interested. So why do you think that? Why do you need to have a semi-automatic rifle? And that's that, you know, there's lots of things that I would be interested in hearing about why they need to do that.
Well, I want one, Tim. I want one.
It looks good on the wall, yeah.
No, but did you know the deputy, you actually, if you have a concealed license to have a concealed weapon, you are automatically deputized by the government. And if you don't act, yeah, in a situation, you get that taken away. Well, you might even go to jail for not
acting. Well, I've spent quite a lot of time in the States over the last 2 years. And one of the things that fascinates me is, I mean, I love travel and I love meeting people. Mm. Because you hear about different opinions and what people are like.
Yeah.
One of the things that fascinated me in the States was we spent a couple of weeks in Joplin in Missouri. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can learn to drive at 14. As long as you're driving to school and back.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, so what does it make? How do you know if they're driving to school? Well, they don't really, you know, but make sure you're not. You kind of make sure that your girlfriend's on the road back to and back from school, or your boyfriend or whatever, you know. And it's like, you mean 14? I said, you know, I'm not sure I'd want 14-year-olds in the UK on the road. But the thing is that different countries have different rules. And it's actually, and I find it interesting, fascinating, where people saying this is what it's like here.
Yeah.
And you know, there's certain places that near Joplin in Missouri that have actually no rules, no government.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. There's no government there. And it's like, wow, isn't that amazing? And it kind of like, I'm you know, people that have got these echo chambers, you know, and I can understand why they've got it, but there's a big wide world out there, and actually there's a whole load of stuff that we can learn from and learn from people. You may not agree with them, but you can learn from them.
Yeah, I think it's a lot to do with what you're comfortable with and how you're comfortable. If you're comfortable with being approached in a certain way, then great, right? But like, you know, like I have arguments with people about all sorts of things, or I have done. And now I don't really argue at all. I just don't get involved, yeah?
Hmm.
And I don't know, maybe it's because I snoozed everyone for 30 days.
Well, that's a great feature on Facebook.
Yeah.
It's to basically snooze people.
Yeah.
And because usually what happens is that there's a cooling down period. So I think if you right click, you can snooze people, and usually there's a the problem then goes away because the news story. There's an old saying that today's news is tomorrow's chip paper.
Yeah, yeah.
And that comes from the days when they used to wrap fish and chips in the UK in newspaper, and so yesterday it was news, and today we're wrapping fish and chips with it. And I think that's still the case. There usually is every day on social media. There is the shocking thing of the day.
Mm-hmm.
There's a news story that everyone seems to pick up on where everybody is shocked by it. And then tomorrow it'll be something else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We move on. And you know, generally I don't get sucked into it, but you know, we need to make sure that we're taking control. We need to make sure we know when we're using our apps. There's lots of functionality in terms of, as you say, snoozing people, unfollowing people without unfriending them.
Yeah, I mean, that was what I was going to ask you. You know, I mean, I wrote something the other day about sort of, you know, taking control of my mind. Yeah, taking back control, if you like. I mean, I don't think we're really actually in control anyway, because we thrive on these endorphins that we get from these messages and from G Suite and the Google Mail and, you know, Twitter, whatever platforms we're on, they're feeding our endorphins when we receive a notification, right? So apart from like turning notifications off and dipping in when you feel like it, which is, and starting social media late in the day or finishing it early, obviously creating a routine that works for you as an individual is the best thing, right? So how do you recommend people like take control back?
I all of those things you mentioned, I think you turn off the notifications. You decide when you're going to use it and when you're not going to use it. I know people that have taken, they've taken social media off their mobile. And they've done that because it's kind of a pain now. So 9 out of 10 people in the latest research use social media through mobile, not through the desktop. Wow. And so there's a certain amount of, it's far more difficult to get your MacBook out and open it out and do that. So I think you need to find a routine, just as much as you may, you know, run 3 times a week or whatever it is, you need to find a routine that works for you. Track your screen time. And there are, you know, on the standard apps, you know, sorry, the standard iPhone functionality that says you can set it up so you can't use certain apps at certain times and stuff. I think that's fair enough. And I do think that you need to take control.
I noticed that. And I found myself just going, allow another 15 minutes, another 15 minutes, another 15 minutes. And I just carried on and on. And then I was like, oh dear, maybe I've got a problem. It's funny, isn't it? It's like that movie, like we didn't really, as people who know a bit about marketing, we didn't really learn anything new. Not really. It just made it all come to a point where people actually took what we've been saying for the last few years as truth, right? And then I interviewed someone, her episode will come out before this one. And she works for like the publicist group in customer experience, omnichannel kind of social. Yeah, that's her arena. And she was saying, you know, this misinformation that, you know, you can have an email and you can track that across all these channels. Well, she was saying that's actually illegal to do that. Apparently, that's what she was saying.
I would say under GDPR, it's probably difficult.
Yes. Yeah, and the Californian
and legislation. Yeah, Californian thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and she was saying so. Then it always comes back to the messaging, doesn't it? It comes back to, you know, getting this message right. If you are a marketer and looking at the audience and saying, well, actually, you know, I need to learn more about my audience so then I can get this message right. And I don't really, in essence, need to personalize something to them, because actually I've refined my audience, so I know all about them and the categories they're in. So the message that I send anyway is going to encourage them to repurchase or purchase something, right?
Yeah, there's another book which is probably is probably the most boring book I've
You're killing me with these boring books.
Which is Thinking Fast and Slow. Well,
Case Group. Good.
So it's a case study about how people think fast and slow. Give you an example. In the old days when we sent letters to each other, we thought slowly. Mm-hmm. So a letter would come in, we'd scan it, put it down. Then we'd pick it up 2 days later and read it.
Yeah.
And we might sit down and reply to it, you know, maybe a week or 2 weeks later. Mm-hmm. The thing is that we have plenty of time to digest it and think about our process.
Right.
What happens now is that we think fast, which is that we actually hit, you know, we see something on social media and we immediately respond to it. And quite often that means that we are not collective with our thoughts. We just basically do something or we just share it. So there's other manipulation going on. There's a manipulation done by the, what was, the UK Independence Party. So what was Michael Farage's party? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So for those that don't outside the UK, it's a pro-Brexit party. And what they realized was that they got an email list, and all the people on the email list were pro-Brexit people. But they thought there has to be people out there that are pro-Brexit that we can reach, but we're not going to reach them through email. Okay. So they actually put out a picture. Now, the way that Michael Farage Nigel Farage always promoted himself was a man of the people, a person that you could go to the pub and drink a pint of beer with. Mm-hmm. That's his position. So they actually put out a picture of him drinking at a pub, and the poster said, this picture has tried to be banned by the PR department of the UK Independence Party. let's share this to annoy them. So what they did was, and I have a friend who's always, even though I've told him this, he always gets stung by this. So what happens is that he shared it. Because he's a Remainer, because he wants to poke one in the eye to Nigel. So what happens? What that does is that there will be people who, in my friends, who are Brexiteers, who see that and go, "There's Nigel. He's a good guy. He's a man of the people." So what they were able to do was that they used, and this was used a lot during the. This was actually used a lot. This is never talked about because everyone always talks about Facebook ads.
Right.
The thing about Facebook ads is that you don't believe because it's biased. Mm-hmm. So in this book, page 125, he says nobody looks at Facebook ads anyway. What this is doing is it's using people that you know, love and trust. So my friend, I he's one of my best friends.
Yeah.
He's sharing the material.
Yeah.
And what they were doing in the States was that they were getting the Trump supporters were getting the Democrats to basically share stuff that was, here's a picture of Trump. He wants to get this banned. And that was enabling them to use people as a way of sharing stuff out.
Interesting.
And so you're not on an advert, which you'll go, well, it's an advert. This is using people that, and this is one of the things that we need to be very careful about.
Yeah.
About you see something and you share it. I've got a friend, my partner on a WhatsApp group, you know, it's a family WhatsApp group. And she has somebody that says, and now, you know, she'll get a mail that says, do not, you know, it'll be some sort of spam, which if you click on it shares malware, and she'll basically share the post with the malware and then say, don't click on this. one of the things that we have to do is as a society is become far more educated in terms of what we should be doing and what we shouldn't be doing. And I think at the moment we are being manipulated purely because we're not educated in that form. I'm not sure whether that's generational or not. But, you know, there are many, many forms of manipulation, and we just need to be aware of it. And I think if we slow down and actually delete stuff rather than sharing it, it might help. It might
I
help.
Agree.
Because this is the thinking fast and slow.
I agree. I actually lost an acquaintance over the Black Lives Matter thing because I shared an All Lives Matter post, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't realize like the confrontation between those two things, and the post looked all right, and it was just weird, and like they're very clever the way that they come up with these campaigns. But actually, then I heard a rumor about the Chinese Communist Party who were funding the Black Lives Matter thing in the first place, right?
Well, I think
it's crazy.
I think one of the things that we need to do is, you know, we just need to, whenever we see something, we need to take a step back.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always people that will be putting out because, you know, if someone says the Chinese party are funding the Black Lives Matter, it's probably because someone has a political axe to grind against the Black Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we need to decide, you know, most of us are basically anti-racist.
Yeah, we are.
And I think that, you know, one of the things that we need to do is, you know, there were. What happened with that was that there was a whole bunch of people stepped forward and started manipulating. And there was far right groups sharing stuff
It was ridiculous.
There was all kinds of stories, and you need to take a step back, and you need to be very careful about sharing anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, after that, like literally, I don't share anything really anymore, unless it's like my own personal belief or like something that I've read and it's really interesting, usually from MIT. And if you don't subscribe to MIT Technology Review, then you have 3 articles a month. Tough. You know, but it's a bonkers thing. I mean, like with these bad actors and how, like, you know, you've got foreigners, right, who are in essence manipulating other countries' democratic systems because they want democracy to fall. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's insane.
I did a Twitter course
back in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
At the Guardian newspaper.
Okay.
And they did a poll, you know, there was hundreds of us in the room, and they sort of said, so why are you here? And a third of the people there were anti-capitalist, and what they were going to do was that they were going to use social media to bring down capitalism. And you've got to understand that there are, but there's always been people like this, you know.
Yeah,
there's always been propaganda.
Of course.
There's always been ways of manipulating news and information.
Yeah.
And it's just a different way of doing it, but doing it at scale. And one of the things that we just have to do is that we need to understand that there are people, you know, these things are happening, and we just need to be aware of it. And actually, you know, before we start sharing stuff or commenting on stuff, realizing that there are probably people that are wanting the views to be manipulated in a particular way.
Yeah. We just need to take our time, think before we do things, and just be more measured, right? Without like reacting really quickly to all these things. I think that's the biggest takeaway, right? Is, you know, take your time to control the time that you spend on social media, and also be more measured in your approach to it, right? I mean, I think if there are two takeaways, those are probably the best ones, I would think. Agree?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree.
Super. Well, thank you. It's been absolutely super. And I haven't spoken to you for years.
It's good.
We did some great YouTube interviews ages ago. Yeah, 5 years ago or something. 6, maybe. Crazy, right? Time flies.
Good to see you again.
Thanks. And how do people find you if they need you?
So LinkedIn is a good place to find me. I'm Timothy Hughes or Tim Hughes. I'm also Timothy_Hughes on Twitter. And Hughes is spelled H-U-G-H-E-S. And they're the two best places to get me.
Super. Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks, Annette. Good to talk.
Thanks for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections, and don't forget to drop us a review.